Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 1 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. If you are waking up despondent these days, if you feel that somehow you have missed God's will, if to you the world is in turmoil with no way out, then just perhaps the story of this man may help you. If you take a good hard look at how he sought and found God's will, then beware, for the next step is up to you. To begin our story, we offer you the first brushstrokes in the portrait of a happy, disciplined, dedicated Christian who might be an acquaintance of yours. His name happens to be Nelson Bell, and he's one of America's foremost religious editors. Before that, he was a highly successful surgeon in North Carolina, and even earlier, a medical missionary in China.
Evacuate China? Leave the hospital and everything here in Chinjiangpu to the Japanese? Well, that may be the thing to do from the human standpoint, if there's yet time. But we are not here at the call of man, or to do the work of man. God himself has brought us here. We'll stay until God leads us out.
It is 1941, China, and early morning at the Chinjiangpu Hospital. Mimi and Didi, children of missionary parents, talk of their uncertain future.
Oh, Mamie, what's the matter with you? You aren't any fun anymore. You never want to play or laugh or anything. Even if we do go, we'll come back again.
Maybe. Maybe you will. But I'll have to go to high school and college like Rosa and Ruth. And if we go now, it'll be years before I come back.
Well, maybe we won't have to go.
You know that's not true. The American consul sent word that we should evacuate.
But that was in February. Now it's April and we're still here.
Yes, I know. But Mama's worse and Papa may think
I'll tell you something, maybe. I've been asking God to let us stay here.
It'll probably be like before I was born.
What do you mean?
Rosa and Ruth were praying for a baby brother.
Of course. Two girls.
You sound just like the Chinese, as if having a baby girl was a disaster. Anyway, Mama and Papa didn't think so, because they prayed for a baby girl, and I came. So Rosa and Ruth's prayers were...
Yeah, maybe God won't answer me either.
Anyway, Papa and Mama aren't praying to go back to the States. They're just asking God to lead.
How do you know?
If you listened at prayers, you'd know too, silly. Anyway, when Papa prayed last night, he told God that he and Mama were perfectly willing to go or stay.
God knows, Virginia and I are perfectly willing to go or to stay, and he will surely lead.
Well, you know we all will go along with whatever you decide, Dr. Bell.
Yes, thanks. If only so much didn't depend on what we do. Right. There is such need right now, so many opportunities.
And problems difficult for the rest of us to handle. And the Japanese, for all their friendliness to the hospital...
Yes, I know. They seem to be getting jealous of us for some reason.
Well, of your immense prestige, of course, and the way the Chinese love you.
I'm glad they're still friendly. But I have no illusions as to what might happen.
No, neither have I. I've been to police headquarters with you and heard the screams of Chinese being tortured or caned.
And I guess we've sewed up enough stomachs split by bayonets to have no illusions. The fact remains, though, that God has put men here now who are friendly toward us.
Yes, fortunately.
Incidentally, did you happen to notice yesterday in church?
Well, yes, the church was really crowded.
As it has been every Communion Sunday recently. But did you happen to notice some strangers?
Yes, rather fierce looking.
There were several of them I saw.
Yes, I know who you mean. I noticed they hesitated and then took communion as though they didn't know what to do.
I know them. They're Japanese spies.
Spies?
Like I said, the Japanese are still fundamentally suspicious of us and our work.
Even with the consul's urgent advice to evacuate, I didn't really think it would mean war with us. But now, with a Japanese statesman in Berlin...
Now, the Axis will soon become an offensive alliance.
Oh, you seem awfully sure of that.
Oh, I've seen it coming ever since the Japanese invaded China.
Yes, but to think they would attack America.
With the Axis behind them.
And then when that happens...
In the event of war, my friend, you know as well as I do that the Bells will become an immediate liability to our Chinese friends.
And our work will be snuffed out.
And we ourselves killed, or thrown into concentration camps.
Well, you say that calmly enough.
I've faced it with Virginia already, before the Lord.
But well, she couldn't take it, could she? Sick as she is?
Well, in March, when she had that bad recurrence of headaches that lasted for those two horrible days and nights... She said she felt she could stand a concentration camp if she kept well, but...
But she's not well.
Oh, it would be awful if she were ill. And yet the Lord has not made clear to us if he means us to stay.
Well, I thought you were praying definitely that if you were to stay, the headaches would subside.
Yes.
Well?
She's worse again. At the end of last month, it seemed she was better. Her sinus condition had cleared, and even that mild kidney problem that was troubling her.
All right. Did you get any results from the last test you made?
No, not yet.
You know, some of us were saying the other day how strange is your indecision about going home. You and Virginia are usually so quick in making up your minds.
I guess it's because so much depends on what we do this time. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what our final decision will be. But I know God will make his will plain. For he knows that we want to do that and nothing else. But the Chinese, they are the ones. What is it, Sheik? Come in.
See, it is here.
Another ransom note?
Take it, Chong Ai Hua, and see.
The paper seems the same as the last note. Whew. 60,000 li. There was nothing more. The paper is bloody.
A little finger. My brother's little finger. What can I do? I have not money to pay ransom.
Bandits again. More here than anywhere I've ever been.
Communist hordes had driven away most of the nationalist guerrillas and administrators who operated outside the Japanese-held cities.
This is a pronouncement for all the people. All of the grain produced on the farms around here must be brought into the main depot. There it will be divided, and each family will receive according to its family numbers. There are cadres to persuade those who are reluctant. All will bring their grain in.
Communist hordes had seized the farmers' grain, and starvation had been added to the people's misery.
Here comes Father.
Hello, children. Darling, how are you? Not trying to do too much, are you?
Hello, darling. You know, we decided to take much more luggage this time than usual.
Yes, I know. We won't be coming back here until after long years of war between America and Japan, I'm afraid.
Oh, I wish there was space for some of our wedding presents.
The glass would break, I'm afraid.
And the silver is too heavy. Oh, I know. And I guess I should be grateful for all the years we've enjoyed them.
Almost 25 years.
Oh, dear.
Don't overtax your strength, love. Little by little, you know.
I want to finish everything and be able to enjoy the yard and the birds before we leave. It isn't easy to leave. This is home.
I wish we didn't have to go. I don't like the States anyway.
Dee Dee, you shouldn't talk like that. And anyway, it's not true.
Look what I have.
What are they?
Let's see.
Passes.
Passes for what?
It's funny. I'm so sure of war, I guess, that I forgot to ask the Japanese official for two-way passes.
Oh, To come back, you mean?
And he offered them to me himself. What do you think of that?
Oh, it must be the first time anything like that's ever happened.
You can be sure I accepted with alacrity.
How long are they good for?
Until September 1942.
Oh, that's a long time away.
Almost a year and a half.
We'll be back before then, won't we? Well, won't we?
Oh, Dee Dee, stop.
Why, Mamie, you're crying. What's the matter?
Nothing.
What did I say, Mother? What did I do?
Mamie realizes it will be years before she can hope to see home again, Dee Dee. She has to go on to college.
Yeah. That's what you said this morning. So?
So I may never get back to Chinyangpu again. Never!
Well, I never really thought the bells would leave.
Cheng Ehua had great peace in heart about going, Ling Sun.
Yes, even so.
Quite right. If they had not heard on radio about little sister Rosa.
God must have had that message for them right at that time. Why, they didn't even know Rosa had been sick again, let alone had to have an operation.
The pulling of their hearts to America made easier the tearing of their hearts from Ching Cheng Hu.
Gee, did you see the big banner that the innkeepers and coolies who live on the street near the hospital gave the bells?
I helped to write the inscription.
Well, yeah, and all their names were on it.
Oh, excuse me, please.
Yes?
May I get through, please? Oh, hello, Chal. You sing the bells off, too?
Yes.
Everybody seems to be here this morning. I think I saw all the missionaries and the entire hospital staff and servants plus all kinds of citizens, country folk, innkeepers, tradesmen, even Japanese.
Oh, really?
Oh, just think of it. Everybody down at the Grand Canal jetty to see the bells off. Even me. Oh. Well, toodaloo, old chap. See you around. Excuse me. May I get through, please?
Yes. What a lady. Say, who sent the brass band, do you know?
Fu Teng.
Oh, yes. That's the senior Chinese puppet officer, isn't it?
As you say.
Well, you know, Dr. Bell operated on him, so he must have wanted to show his gratitude.
He also sent a silver shield and a banner to Cheng Ehua.
I saw that.
He also sent some money.
Well, they really liked the gift presented by the hospital staff. Oh, they were beautiful. 24 pieces of beautiful antique china. You should have seen Virginia pack those.
The crowd is going now. We go too?
Yes, I guess so. It seemed strange in Ching Chong Pu without them.
Monday, May 1941. It is a date I will keep in my heart.
Yes, almost a quarter of a century since they landed on this same jetty on the Grand Canal. You know, I'll bet you could write a book about all their experiences. A quarter of a century in China.
A book? Yes, Chal. Those experiences make quite a tale, especially when you remember that it's the story of one man who earned the title Chang Ewa, the bell who is lover of the Chinese people. Next time, we go back to the beginnings. Who was Dr. Bell? What did he want to do? Why did he go to China? And so we conclude Chapter 1 of the story of A Foreign Devil in China by John C. Pollock. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 2 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. constrained by his love for the Chinese people and sustained by the grace of God, Nelson Bell remained on the mission field for 25 years. But now he must leave China, and at a time when the hospital work had never been more encouraging. God had protected and preserved it, provided for its needs in spite of the Japanese occupation of Chenjiangpu. Now, aboard the ship, Nelson Bell hunched his shoulders and leaned on the railing, looking down on the foaming green and white water. After all, God was taking them out of China. There was no other way to explain what had happened. They had prayed definitely that if God meant them to stay, Virginia would be healed of her headaches. But she had grown steadily worse. Now she was seriously ill. They had decided to leave China. The Lord had certainly given them peace regarding their decision. Rather than face captivity in China, God must have work for them in America. It was He who was taking them back, just as He had brought them out nearly a quarter of a century before. How long ago it seemed. Bell smiled as he remembered writing to Virginia from his room on campus at Washington and Lee University.
Come on in, Jonah. Come on in. We know it's you.
Oh, we sure do. Whew. One whiff and there can be no mistake.
Oh, come on, fellas. I was late finishing grooming old Rock tonight, and it's one sure way to help pay my board.
Well, you could at least shower before giving us the pleasure of your company.
Yeah, well, the bathroom was busy, and I couldn't
Don't let him needle you, Jonah. Come on in. Your milk's over on the small table.
Thanks, Nelson. Add the books again, huh? You sure are a glutton for punishment, even for a budding lawyer.
At the books? Oh, no. Can't you see this elaborate setup of mirrors? It's five, isn't it, this time, Ed? Nelson has them all fixed up to reflect the picture of his sweetheart.
Oh, if you had a sweetheart that looked like Virginia, that blonde hair and gray eyes is quite a combination.
Oh, besides which, she has a winsome personality and exceptionally keen wit. She plays the organ and piano, sings, and never fear, my friend, I'm as aware as yourself of her sterling qualities. And if I were a man inclined to be envious, I might even...
For heaven's sake, Al, what's got into you tonight?
What you are not aware of, Jonah... Of the stables instead of the whale.
Oh, come on.
As I was saying, what you are not aware of is that our esteemed friend Nelson is in problems and in need of inspiration, hence the mirrored reflections of his fiancée.
Something wrong, Nelson? Can I help?
No, not really, Jonah. Thanks. It's just, well...
Just that how does one write in a fiancé wife that, without consulting her... One has switched from pre-law to pre-med, and instead of a nice, quiet, solvent life, as an up-and-coming young lawyer, one has decided to become a medical missionary.
Mother, I'm home. Was there a letter for me today?
In here, darling. Your letter's here on the kitchen table.
Oh, thanks. I was almost sure there would be one today.
Have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Why, what's wrong, darling? You're crying.
Oh, no, I'm not. Not really.
Well, those are tears running down your cheeks. Isn't Nelson coming this weekend? I know you were so looking forward to it.
Oh, no, it's not that, Mother.
Of course not. That wouldn't make you cry.
Mother, Nelson says he's switched from pre-law to pre-med.
To pre-med? Well, that's all right. To heal the sick is a noble occupation.
But, Mother,
I know Nelson has physician ancestors, as well as lawyers. In fact, I think there was one, I can't remember his name, who died of a fever caught from his Lexington patients.
Oh, Mother.
Yes, I think that would be lovely. Dr. and Mrs. Nelson Bell. In fact, with Nelson's brother, McKim, already in service.
Mother, listen to me, please.
I am. You said Nelson had switched from pre-law to pre-med. Those were your exact words.
Mother, Nelson wants to be a medical missionary.
A medical missionary? A medical missionary?
Yes. Isn't it exciting?
Exciting? You mean you would go along with this?
Why, of course, Mother. Don't you remember way back in 1906 when I was 14?
I know how old you were.
I had a rather vague inclination to be a foreign missionary. Don't you remember?
Well, yes, but you were so young, and when you became engaged to Nelson...
I abandoned the idea. I would marry Nelson, and Nelson would be a lawyer. Oh, but now... Oh, Mother, it's so wonderful.
But who knows where you'll go? You'll be so far away, and I'll probably never see you again.
Now, Mother, you know you've been praying for years for missions and missionaries.
Yes, I know. But I didn't expect to have to give my own daughter.
Hey, fella. That knuckleball. I've never seen anything like it. It didn't twist at all. Just before it got to me, it jumped down and hit me on the shin. Come on. I'm signing you up right now, Bill.
I didn't really expect them to put that in, did you, Nelson?
You mean about not being required to travel or play on Sunday?
And you said they accepted it without any complaint?
Well, you see, Christy Mathewson had that clause put in his contract with the New York Giants. And he's one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
Sort of a precedent already established, then.
Yeah. I feel it was God's leading.
Nelson, you don't have any regrets, do you? I mean, about not going into the major leagues.
You know the answer to that, love. It would mean giving up my studies, and I've only got one more year.
But the fame and the money.
You know I threw away the prospect of fortune and fame for both of us when I left law to train for medical missions. And though I'll always love baseball, I guess, I have to say no to that ambition, too.
Oh, dear.
Are you sorry?
Oh, no, Nelson. I was just afraid. Well, there were so many offers and so much money.
Oh, my darling. Do you have any idea how adorable you look in that green outfit? It's just the color of the new leaves in your eyes.
Nelson...
Virginia, dearest love, promise me you'll marry me the first minute after graduation's over.
Need you ask? Oh, Nelson, not here. Out on the green?
Ah, who cares? Sometimes it seems like eons since we've been engaged and forever until we can get married.
What a distorted sense of time you have. Let's see, it's been exactly 5 years, 1 month, 15 days, and... Just a minute. I'll calculate the hours. 16 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh, for goodness sake. How could I?
How could you what?
How could I forget the most important thing of all? And I was going to tell you the minute I saw you this morning.
Well, what is it?
Well, Miss Leftwich, I want you to know that you are engaged to, and at this minute looking at, a most unusually talented, intelligent... and lucky man.
Silly. Prove it.
Well, I have it all written right down here in this piece of paper.
I thought you were just fooling. But it looks like an official letter from the medical college.
Right you are. And it says here that because of my energy and ability, see, just like I told you, Nelson Bell is granted the very coveted opportunity of doubling as a student with the practical work of a resident intern at MCV's Memorial Hospital.
At the Memorial? Oh, Nelson.
I'll have to work awfully hard. We won't have much time together.
Well, I'll be busy too, Nelson, finishing my training at St. Luke's.
What a fantastic opportunity. I suppose I shouldn't feel this way, but when God says, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding," he really means it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must say, Egbert, I'm afraid I think you took a great deal of unwarranted authority upon yourself in traveling all the way by train from Nashville to Richmond in a wild goose chase to see a young man none of us had ever heard of before.
After all, Egbert Smith is only the executive secretary of the Southern Presbyterian Foreign Missions Committee.
After all, it's his responsibility.
I personally must insist on a very careful perusal of Bell's qualifications and habits, as well as his references.
Didn't each member of the committee already receive a copy? I know I did. Yes. And I would like to commend Mr. Smith on his activities.
Yes, thank you. I would like to explain again that due to the urgency of the situation in China...
I can only assume you refer to the most unfortunate and tragic suicide, the last promising young doctor we sent out after only a few months on the field.
I do.
What I would like to know, gentlemen, is why. Why did this young man commit suicide? And what proof do we have that if we send another young doctor out to China, he may not do the very same thing?
Unfortunately, we are not at this time in a position to answer those questions. But as I was saying, in view of that circumstance and that Dr. James Woods...
Well, Woods is a veteran of 22 years.
And he's overdue for his furlough, but can't leave until a replacement arrives. Well, I felt that it was most urgent that I contact Nelson Bell. A friend informed me that he's a medical volunteer.
He hasn't graduated yet, and when he does, he will be only 21 years old. Far too young, in my opinion.
His references are unanimously excellent. Excellent. Seems to me that he is one of the brightest and in every way the finest young man we have ever had before us for an appointment.
Yes, but at least one of the referees suggests that he should first serve an intern in a general hospital for several years or possibly an apprenticeship to some active man doing some special work.
My idea exactly. Now, how can a man just out of medical school be the thoroughly competent surgeon we need for the foreign field?
Definitely. I agree.
There you are, gentlemen.
Gentlemen, we all know that the most unpredictable thing in the world is a missionary. Are we qualified to predict behavior? The most elaborate system of checks and balances simply cannot guarantee what a missionary will be. Not until he is tried and tested on the field is his real character revealed. We must trust God.
Yes, well, but we have a responsibility
to get the best man on the field.
Gentlemen, I make a motion.
I still say he's too young, too inexperienced.
Was Nelson Bell too young? Was any man just out of medical school able to fill the stringent and varied requirements of a medical missionary? Could a church be found to support so young and inexperienced a doctor? And in addition to the flexibility required of going into a new culture, one who was also facing the adjustments of the newly married? Nelson and Virginia were aware of the questions. They were facing them too. Yet there was none of that fear in their hearts that confuses and chills. Did not the promise say, "Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." In their hearts was a faith so deep and so sure, there was no room for fear. And so we conclude Chapter 2 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 3 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. It had been exactly 17 months since Nelson Bell, at the age of 21, had received his medical degree. It had been a mere 10 months since he and his bride had landed at the International Settlement in Shanghai, boarded the launch that carried them the remaining 125 miles up the Grand Canal, and arrived at Chengjiangpu, where they saw, for the first time, the Chinese characters above the hospital gate.
See there, Nelson? Ginny? Those five Chinese characters there above the gate? They say, Renti Si Uen, Benevolent Compassionate Healing Hall, or it might be translated, Love and Mercy Hospital.
Now, in October 1917, Nelson Bell became superintendent of the only hospital in an area where more than 2 million people lived, superintendent and head of both medical and surgical departments. There was no doubt that God had chosen this energetic young man to do his work in China, despite the reservations of the mission board. His missionary colleagues, too, wondered how Nelson, fresh from medical college, could take over the work of Dr. Wood, an outstanding physician and veteran missionary who had an enormous reputation among the Chinese, not only among scholars and officials, but among the poor. They knew the next 2 years of Dr. Wood's furlough would either make or break Nelson Bell.
So that's that. I'll be buffer and shock absorber for the whole place.
Oh, Nelson, and be buffeted from both sides.
Yeah, but being administrator will give me the authority to screen in the whole place before summer and control the flies and mosquitoes.
Nelson, after Dr. Wood said no?
I have to, Virginia. Just like back home, the flies in China don't know that the third floor is above the fly line.
Well, I hope that he
doesn't. I admire and respect Dr. Wood so much. His experience.
When you've been a missionary as long as Dr. Woods, you'll have the experience too, my dear.
His devotional life, his methodical ways, and his knowledge of how to have his wishes carried out by the Chinese in little as well as big things. Something hard to do.
You had all the men in the ward laughing this morning.
I told them a joke, a typically American one, and they loved it. Got the point right away. Now that I've realized that both Chinese and American jokes depend on plays on words and exaggeration, it's been easy.
Oh, when I passed the door on the way to the woman's ward, they were roaring with laughter.
I'm just applying a bit of biblical remedy.
Biblical remedy? What is that?
A merry heart doeth good like medicine.
Aunt Sophie, welcome.
Oh, I didn't expect to find you still at home, Ginny. I just stopped by to leave some of my special green jelly. Oh, isn't it awful? Another gunshot wound brought in early this morning. I understand that makes 50 of the 170 beds filled with gunshot wounds. Well, I am sure I completely understand why the authorities are reacting so strongly, my dear.
Yes, Nelson tells of horrible inhumanities. And I've just
dear, you have been crying.
No.
And I didn't even know when I came in. What is the matter? Tell Aunt Sophie. Oh,
it's nothing, really.
Oh, I know you are just feeling homesick. Yes, I know. A woman always feels that way when she's expecting. Home seems so far away, and it takes so long for letters to get.
So few bother to write. I really wonder whether they care what we're doing.
Oh, of course they do, my dear. And I'm sure they are praying, as undoubtedly they promised to do before you left. And you just have to think it'll soon be all over and there'll be an adorable, precious baby to keep you company.
Did Uncle Jimmy tell you that Nelson has opened a dispensary in the country and hopes to open more, if not right away, at least when Dr. Woods gets back? Feeders to the hospital, he calls them.
Feeders to the feeders to. Why? Already they're having to put more beds in the wards and even in the single bedrooms. And if they're not careful, they'll be having to put beds in places never intended to hold patients. And I think you and I ought to be offering a prayer for grace to accept this additional work right now. And for funds to enlarge the hospital. Only the Lord knows where that'll come from.
Oh, God, loving Heavenly Father, I feel sometimes like I'm looking down into the mouth of hell itself. That boy they brought in this morning. God, how can it be it was his own father who poured the quicklime into his eyes because his son had disgraced him, he said. And that child plastered with arsenic to cure her malaria. Oh, dear Father, what can I use to heal the places where the skin and the flesh have been eaten away? And that woman they brought in after ransoming her from the bandits. Father, if it were only an incident now and then, I could bear it, I think. But every day there's something new and horrible. Now it's time to start operating. As always, Father, I pray for wisdom and skill and steadiness of hand and for the mind of Christ with those to whom I go. I love you, Father, and I know you're able to meet every man's needs. In Christ's name, amen. Good morning, Mr. Chang.
Look, Dr. Bell, I can see perfectly since you operated and give me these glasses. And I have sent you others to help, too.
Mr. Chang, I'm glad to be able to operate or do what I can, but...
You operated on the other lady I sent, and she, too, can now see. Although, not so well as I think. And even though you did not operate on the other one, she, too, is now better. And this
Mr.
one here...
Mr. Chang, I tried to explain to you the last time. There are many different eye diseases... And surgery is not the remedy for all of them. I do my best.
Today I brought you another patient, Dr. Bell. A man. He is all blind. His son leads him. I told him you would help him and he would be well.
But Mr. Chang...
Go, Dr. Bell, in my city. You are known as the man who makes the blind to see.
Oh, dear Father. Make the blind to see. Help me for your name's sake.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. To think, Nelson, you brought Jenny and the two girls all the way to Chinjung at night and by motorcycle. And then you dropped...
Well, Uncle Jimmy, you know that with all the rains and flooding we've been having, the Grand Canal is flowing too high for boats and...
I always have called you a go-getter, Nelson, but this is going a bit too far even for a go-getter.
Uncle Jimmy, I explained to you.
So you just dumped the family off here and said you had to go on to Nanking to see the American consul. Well, did you see him?
Did I what?
Did you see the American consul?
Oh, yes, and convinced him to inform the military governor of the situation and asked him to send government troops.
And your local warlord. Now, what's his name again?
Kung Fu. Oh, he's afraid to report it lest he be ousted by the arrival of fresh troops.
Politics, it's the same the world over.
But it really was bad in Chinkungpu. The rains, the floods, the famine, and all the starving peasants seemed to join the bandits. Where else had they to turn? So I had to get help for the city if I could. Did Virginia tell you?
Well, before we put her to bed, she said that on Wednesday night, when you were reading, two Chinese doctors, Elder Gao and one of the teachers, came to tell you to get out of the city.
Would you believe it? I hadn't even heard the rumors.
Well, I could believe it of many of us. A few have been able to pass the Chinese language exams the first attempt, like you and Jenny. Goodness, that must be 4 years ago.
Yeah, at least. And we both had lots of practice since.
Practice in what? Tennis? Oh, now, you just sit down, Nelson, and stop your pacing and have some nice hot coffee. You must be cold after that trip to Nanking.
Thank you,
you know,
Sophie.
You really can't be more of a tennis champion than you are already, Nelson, even with more practice.
Oh, Nelson, remember that broiling July day you and I were playing?
Hard singles, and the sweat was pouring down our faces.
And old Dr. Lung, well, I remember
his hands all folded in the sleeves of his gown.
Watched utterly dumbfounded.
And finally, he called out to us, "Honorable sirs, could you not hire coolies to hit that ball for you?"
Oh, so what had you had lots of practice in, if not tennis?
Chinese, my dear, just Chinese. Seems like Nelson here hadn't even heard any rumors that the bandits were advancing in Jinjingpu.
Oh, of course, we all knew that on August 7th they'd captured the market town.
But that's 20 miles away, though, isn't it?
Did they kill any?
Yeah, 200 citizens there. Oh. And the next day they moved farther south, away from us, killed 600, and carried away the rich for ransom.
Then the inevitable is...
Yes, relatives in Chinjiangpu began receiving severed ears and fingers. The merchants and officials were terrified.
And no wonder. Oh, so it was your friends who warned you to leave. Oh, Jenny was so dead on her feet, we didn't even want to ask many questions, you know.
Yes, that. Oh, my own inquiries the next morning made me accept their advice. As for myself, I would have stayed. But with Virginia and then Rosa only three and Ruth so tiny. Besides, hopefully, I've done some good getting the troops started. Is my family still asleep?
All of them. Ruthie wakened once, and I gave her a bottle, and she went right back to sleep. And dear Jenny's exhausted. She probably won't even wake until late this afternoon.
You know, you can trust Aunt Sophie with the family, Nelson. She just loves having them here. Someone to mother over and take care of.
Yes, I know. And thanks.
No thanks needed, Nelson. You know that. Now, you just hurry up and drink that. All of it. Now, and you get some rest, too. There won't be anyone coming in here to bother the doctor yet. They don't even know you've arrived, and we'll just keep it a secret for a while, at least till you've made up a bit of sleep.
Oh, I'm not going to rest, Aunt Sophie. I'm going back to Chinjiangpu.
But Nelson, what will Jenny say?
Virginia will understand. We settled that a long time ago. We both will give unstinted missionary service, but for Virginia, the children and home come first. I'm not having a wife with a nervous breakdown because her priorities weren't established properly, nor children who suffer because their mother is too involved in mission work. At any rate, for Virginia, that means staying right here in Chinjiang with you, okay?
Of course, but Nelson, you really should look out for yourself now.
I really should get back to Chinjiangpu, to the hospital, and whatever else may need me. Hopefully the government soldiers will arrive before it's too late.
The bandit army was stopped 4 miles from the city, more by the flooded canals than by government troops, although these did arrive from north and south. The bandits faded away. They never took on a superior force. Virginia had already decided that in the future, whatever dangers her husband might be in should be shared by all the Bells. So she and the two girls returned to Chinjiangpu in time for a typhoon which destroyed houses, left streets underwater, and in two places knocked down the hospital compound wall. Nelson Bell's first term of service certainly had its excitements, but they were nothing compared to what was to come. And so we conclude Chapter 3 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 4 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. And the train clacked on, and the train stopped. The Bell family, uprooted from home and routine in China, got off, got on, got off again. Speaking engagements and invitations to churches came in for Nelson, for Virginia, for them both, with and without the two girls. They prayed and tried to choose the right words to give a clear, fair picture of the work in China. To cut down to a few minutes, the experience and blessings of that entire first term at the Qingjiangpu Hospital, where Nelson, fresh from medical school graduation, and a mere 10 months after arriving in China, became superintendent and head of both medical and surgical departments. It was impossible to crowd into the few minutes allotted them all that they had seen and done. Furlough was tiring, often frustrating, delightful, and wholly absorbing. And then the day came when Nelson was awarded a grant in surgery by the Rockefeller Foundation.
Virginia? Virginia, where are you?
Here, dear. How are you?
I've got it.
You put me down, Nelson. Put me down. Got what? Another medical fellowship?
Oh, not this time. Although it's been a wonderful provision of the Lord to bring myself up to date medically and surgically, this Rockefeller grant.
Oh, I know, darling. But you're gone so much. First Mayo Clinic, and then the urological work at New York Post-Grad Hospital.
Oh, well, you were with me that time.
And the X-ray studies at Massachusetts General.
Are you complaining, my love?
Oh, not really. But what with your studies and your speaking engagements, we hardly see you. And anyhow, you know how glad I really am that you can get all this training. But what's the glorious news?
I've got the telephones.
What?
Now that they've gone automatic, the telephone company has agreed to donate enough telephones and equipment from the old Waynesboro system to install an exchange at Qingjiangpu that will link all the hospital departments, the gatehouses, and eventually every missionary home in the two compounds. Think of all the running around it will save us.
Oh, Mother, listen. Here's a letter from Memphis where Nelson was speaking last week. It's from a Mr. Hudson Hull. Let's see now, he says, Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, Nelson will be so happy. Mr. Hull's going to donate money to put up a 6-room tubercular ward. Oh, how wonderfully good the Lord is. First the money from the First Presbyterian in Houston for hospital buildings, and now this. The Houston unit and the Hull ward.
I don't like furlough, Mama. I don't like the States. I don't have any friends here. I want to go back to China.
What's the matter, Nelson? That's the third time you've sighed. You've been writing and crossing out and writing again all evening.
I'm trying to write to those two young doctors who might join the staff at Qingjiangpu. Remember I told you they'd written after hearing me speak?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember. But you don't usually have so much trouble.
Well, it's so hard to put it all down in a letter. Not the surgical and medical part, that's easy. They just need to know everything in the medical dictionary.
But, so?
Well, it's hard to write what I really feel is essential as we start our second term of service. It's a bit different from our first.
Would it help if you read it to me, Nelson?
Yes, dear, it would. You know what I mean. I'll see if it's what I say. The primary object of our work is to win souls to Jesus Christ. I am more and more convinced that we must stress this. You do not necessarily have to preach, but I would say that you must have the love for souls and desire to win them to the Master if you are to be a successful missionary.
Yes, that's good and so true.
And then one final word, and most important of all. We are but the instruments, and we have the Master's promise to be with us. Without prayer, I would not dare go back. But with the knowledge of his presence and his promise, I would not dare stay. The most precious promise I have found in his word, you will find in Proverbs 3:6. In all thy ways, Acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Think of it. He will direct everything if we but let him.
That's right, Nelson. Just perfect. It says everything and should make them think. Oh, and when I realize how God has directed us this furlough, I wish everyone were as lucky.
It's not luck, dear.
It's God.
It's a principle, like the law of gravity. Drop an object and it will fall. Acknowledge God in everything and he will direct.
I'm so glad he's directing us back to China. This year and a half has seemed almost as long to me as it has been for the girls. Oh, they're so excited about returning.
So am I. Oh, and I think of all the patients and the friends, to say nothing of the new medical units to be built.
If Dr. Woods will let you.
The Lord will take care of that, too. We don't want to go back with any feeling of estrangement.
I know. It's just that I...
Leave it with the Lord, Virginia. If he wants me to build it, it will work out. From up here, you can see more clearly what I was explaining to you.
Yeah.
The administration building connects the old hospital and the new. It looks like the crossbar of an H.
Mm-hmm. From what I understand, local inhabitants feel this building's going up like a mushroom. That's amazing. All you've done. Well, that nine-room operating suite with the walls of cement and marble chips rubbed smooth.
It's easy to clean.
Did you really do all the plumbing yourself?
Yeah, with the help of hospital boys. It must be the very first plumbing system in North Jiangsu. Just spigots and drain pipes, you know. There was no way to install modern sanitation here.
When did you do it?
Oh, in spare hours.
The mission board didn't know you were a plumber in addition to being a doctor.
I'm not really. Just taught myself last furlough because I wanted to be sure of proper work.
Right.
Now, here's the elevator.
Oh, that must be a real help.
Oh, even three stories is a lot when you have to run up and down all day.
Sure.
And for the patients.
Oh, all right.
Let's ride down. It's functioning.
Good. Say, isn't this going faster than it should?
Yeah, something's wrong. This never happened before.
We're going to crash to the bottom, end up on your wharf with broken bones.
Jump in the air just before the impact.
All right. When?
Now! Are you all right?
Yeah, just fine. A bit shaken, that's all.
Thank the Lord.
Well, from what I've seen, I'll tell Houston that the buildings will last just as long as the mission work in China lasts.
Tell them to please remember us constantly in your prayers.
Oh, I will. Coming safely down that runaway elevator unscathed makes me realize how God answers prayers for missionaries. Well, I must say, this has really been an amazing experience. Yes, sir, amazing.
Some more rice, Mr. Fulton?
Thank you. I believe I will. You know, that Dr. Bell is a fine man.
We think so, and thank God for him.
Yeah, I'm going back to tell them in Houston. The Bell home is a center of gaiety, fun and fellowship, hospitality, faith. Well, everyone likes to go there. And you can't be in his home for half a day, and I stayed there, you know, without being impressed by Nelson's own prayer life. You know, he rises very early every morning for prayer. And I was told that before going into surgery, every patient is told that the doctor had prayer for him by name. Even though I couldn't understand a word of Chinese, when I was with Nelson in the wards, I recognized by the way the patients would call to him. And he would smile and gesture that they were speaking the language of admiration, love, gratitude, respect.
No. And you should have seen the number of Chinese and Americans at the funeral when Nelson Jr. died. Not a year old.
And he'd been such a sturdy infant, so full of life, that he was a favorite with both the foreigners and Chinese.
And he was a boy, which was so important to the Chinese.
He was stricken just before the annual mission meeting. Everyone was in Chinjungpu. Like everyone else, Nelson and Virginia had a house full of guests. And they were the usual efficient selves. So cheerful, it was hard to believe that the baby was critically ill.
And then, when it seemed he was getting better after days and days of illness, his little heart just gave way. Virginia and Nelson were with him, and Virginia told me it was so sweet and peaceful, just quietly leaving us, and going back to God.
Well, God must surely have his hand on Nelson. So much talent, so much love for the people.
I'll never forget the message Nelson gave in the Chinese chapel a day or two later.
Oh, about Jacob, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, what did he say?
Well, he said that that morning he had been reading in Genesis how Jacob at the brook Jabbok wrestled with a stranger, found it was God, and received a blessing which made a new man of him.
But what a price.
Yes. God touched him in the hollow of his thigh. And Nelson said when Jacob left the place of blessing, he limped.
And that comforted him?
Yes. Well, don't you see? Nelson said Jacob limped the next morning, but that limp was because God's hand had touched him. We may have a terrible sorrow which gives us an emotional limp, but it is where God, in his love and mercy, has touched us, bringing us a blessing with a consciousness of God's presence.
And he ended by saying, God has left in our hearts the mark of his loving touch.
Peace and the new sensitivity to God's presence, which little Nelson's death had brought to Nelson and Virginia, was soon put to a tough test. Warlord maneuverings continued to have an element of grim farce, with troops switching sides for higher pay, and battles made more of noise than violence. The real sufferers were the peasants, forced to pay taxes two or three times a year as a district changed hands, and were constantly preyed on by soldiers or bandits and seized for forced labor. But by 1925, a new factor had entered Chinese politics, which eventually was to change the situation. Communists began to play a hidden part in South China. The political crisis, always bad, grew more and more explosive. The revolutionaries won battle after battle, and soon the country fell. The British and American ministers in Peking ordered a total evacuation of missionaries from the interior. The missionary staff at Qingjiangpu took their time. They did not want to withdraw. The decisive factor, however, was a frank acceptance that to stay might increase the difficulties of Chinese Christians when the victorious Revolutionary Army poured into North Changzhou. 6 days passed. They arranged the work at the hospital, advised on problems raised by Pastor Gao and the hospital evangelist, stored their few valuables in the attic, touchingly said goodbye to callers who gravely expressed sorrow at the leaving of Dr. Lover of the Chinese people and his wife and daughters. So the great evacuation took place. With heavy hearts, wondering what terror their city would suffer before they saw it again, Rosa, Ruth, their parents, and all their missionary aunts and uncles left China. And so we conclude Chapter 4 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 5 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. Old Pastor Gao sat looking at the letter he had just sanded. Each brush stroke carried a prayer as the character lengthened down the paper.
My dearly beloved Dr. Bell, we have not seen each other's face for 6 months. And during this time, I have thought of you and your family and longed for you. In my mind's eye, I constantly see your smiling face and talk with you. And in my ears, I hear the sound of your voice singing hymns. Come back. I want you to come back quickly.
Ching Jong Pu had been terrorized by the nationalist communists, and Pastor Gao himself had suffered some persecution after the evacuation of all missionaries from China. The hospital compound had been occupied by troops 9 times and looted. The X-ray machine was the only serious equipment casualty. But the boys' and girls' schools were stripped from top to bottom. Dr. Cao was held in such high esteem by even the most rabid nationalists that the hospital was not molested further, but could keep open until the terror stopped patients from coming to the clinic and the beds were requisitioned for wounded soldiers. As 1927 passed into 1928, war continued in both North and South China. Back in the United States, another baby girl was born to the Bells. They nicknamed her Mamie, meaning little sister. For 4 months, Nelson headed the surgical department of a hospital in West Virginia while the chief surgeon went to Europe. Bell wrote, "A most satisfactory situation financially, as well as to demonstrate that one can take the experience of the mission hospital and use it to great advantage at home." For 6 months, Nelson served as assistant pastor at First Presbyterian at Houston. When inland China at last reopened in the fall of 1928, the church subscribed money for a new X-ray machine, and Benjamin Clayton, now a firm friend of Nelson's, added a substantial donation for him to use as he wished. They were on their way back to China, but too late for old Gao. He lay dying, surrounded by his many children and grandchildren, all Christians through his example and teaching.
That horrible black fever, Nelson. Kela Azar, among the street vendors, the mules, the coolies. Oh, more and more victims.
Fatal. Fatal. Incidents high in North Shansu than anywhere else on Earth. Thousands. Thousands of men, women, and children carried off every year. Fatal, if not treated.
Oh, dear. Why can't I sleep?
This is a bad night for sleep, isn't it, Nelson Bell? That business of the Kala Azar patients. Bad.
Severe anemia.
Nose and gum bleeding.
Dysentery.
Abscesses.
Bronchitis and pneumonia.
Why can't it be morning? Why doesn't morning come? Only a few minutes past 3. Toss and turn. Try to figure out the solution.
Whole villages afflicted.
Kala Azar has made fearful strides.
Antimony. That's what they used for some cures in India and China. But such highly complicated tests and treatment for 2 or 3 months...
Stibosan is the answer.
But it's so costly.
Stibosan, injected intravenously.
But 3 times weekly.
I wish Benjamin Clayton would answer my letter. I'm sure he'll help with the cost to treat the poor.
It's 4 or 5 weeks since you wrote, and no answer.
That's the time it takes for a letter to get across the Pacific to Houston.
Many hundreds more Kala Azar sufferers have died in the meantime.
Oh, God. Oh, God, help me.
Who's that? Oh, it's finally morning.
Daddy?
Is it Rosa? Come in, dear.
Oh, Papa, good morning. Mama says to come quick. Mr. Liu from the Bank of China just came in a rickshaw, and he has a check for you. Mr. Clayton cabled $1,000 to help the Calais Czar patients.
Praise the Lord.
Pass the butter to Rosa, Ruthie. She has asked for it twice now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here, Rosa. I was thinking about yesterday. Did the men at the prison like the warm pants, Papa? And do they have all the jackets they need now?
Don't bother your father now, Ruthie. You know he's been operating all morning and he's tired. Oh, how could I have forgotten? A cable and a letter came for you this morning, love. I didn't send them over to the hospital because I knew you were operating and wouldn't have time to look at them.
I might have forgotten them entirely. Where are they?
On the hall table.
I'll get them. No, I want to. Let me get them, Papa.
Rosa asked first, Ruthie.
And she's already gone.
Then it's my turn next.
All right.
Here they are, Papa. Which one are you going to open first, huh?
The cable, I think. Well, what do you know? What do you know?
What does it say?
It's from Benjamin Clayton.
What
again?
Is it, Papa?
He asks if I can use $2,500 more for the Kayla Azar medicine. Completely unsolicited.
Oh, amazing. Oh, he must have been impressed by your letter of thanks. You wrote a detailed description with it, didn't you?
Yes, but...
Well, you really do need it, don't you, Papa? All those people you told us about in that village, standing by their homes or on the road as you drove by.
You said you could almost tell their sickness by their looks.
Yes, but...
You will accept, won't you, Nelson? It seems obvious that Mr. Clayton intends to undergird the Kala Azar work.
Thank God.
Aren't you going to open the other letter, Papa? Who is it from?
It's postmarked here in China. What? It's from Chang.
Chang? Oh, the former nurse here at the hospital.
Yes. He says he's very ill and begs me to come to visit him. He was always a good, reliable boy when he was here, and a real Christian. I think...
You simply don't have the time, Nelson.
Well, I must take time. I think if I go right away, it's only a bit north of Antung.
But, Nelson, the clinic this afternoon and the dinner tonight...
It's just a run of about 39 miles. If I leave right now, I can make it back for the clinic. A little late, maybe, but...
Does he say what's wrong with him, Papa? Can I go with you?
No, to both your questions. Don't look like that, Virginia. The road to Antung is good. I really feel I should go.
Well, can I go with you, Papa? I could help.
Now, Rosa, you know when Papa says no to one of you, he means no to both of you. You know, you're primarily a surgeon, Nelson, and with all the time these Kala Azar patients are taking, and to go chasing off again when you were out all day yesterday.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. This should make you feel better. I already cabled Dr. Woods this morning.
Dr. Woods? In America?
Yes. I said, unprecedented crowds, unhampered opportunities, come. And I also suggested an idea I had. Remember I discussed it with you? That he contact some newly qualified Christian doctor to do his year's internship here in Tianjinpu?
Oh, I hope it will work. It sounds like such a good possibility to get more staff.
I realize it's a highly original scheme, and some people mightn't like it, but... I think it'll work.
I hope Dr. Woods likes it. He's such a good doctor, but so conservative.
I think he will. Well, I better be on my way, or I won't get back. Bye, all my lovely ladies.
Bye, Papa.
Goodbye, Papa.
Take care, darling. Don't drive too fast. And I hope you find Chang isn't too ill.
Four months' work, March through June, 1929. Patients treated in clinic, 13,545. Inpatients admitted to hospital, 736. Operations performed in hospital, 362.
Operations performed in clinic, 239. With all these blessings, I just have to pray constantly that we will not set our hearts and ambitions on the physical and material side of the work. If we can only use all of these opportunities to win more souls to Christ.
I know just what you mean, Nelson. In all my years in China, I've never known such openness to the gospel as now.
The opportunities are simply wonderful, and the average patient is so very responsive. I wonder...
What, Nelson?
Oh, I'm probably wrong, Uncle Jimmy. But I wonder if God is opening people's hearts in a special way now, because he knows something hard is going to happen in the future.
And I understand that Dr. Wu has made a definite commitment to the Lord.
Yes. And his testimony reminded me so much of old Pastor Gao, possibly because they both had been Confucian scholars. Seems I can still hear old Gao, even though he's with the Lord.
A man fell into a dark, dirty, slimy pit. He tried to climb out of pit and could not. Confucius come along. He saw man in pit, and he said, "Poor fellow, if he had listened to me, he never would have got there," and went on. Buddha come along, and he saw man in pit and said, "Poor fellow, if he will come up here, I will help him." He too went on. Then Jesus Christ came, and he said, "Poor fellow," and jumped down into pit and lift him out. That fellow was me.
Despite the unsettled conditions of the early 1930s, the Chin Jong Pu Hospital forged ahead, fulfilling the role implied by its Chinese name, Love and Mercy, or Benevolent Compassionate. It now had 3 Chinese and 3 American doctors. The hospital staff had the satisfaction of receiving continual expressions of gratitude. Bell and his colleagues in the early 30s all noted unprecedented openness to the gospel at the hospital, in the countryside, and in the jail visitation. On the Grand Canal in the spring of 1931, Bell was actually asked by the launch officials to preach to other passengers. It was in this atmosphere of growing acceptance that disaster struck. Disaster that soon became personal. And so we conclude Chapter 5 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 6 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. Assume a storm is coming. You know what storms are. They have to do with umbrellas and raincoats, rivers flooding, and fear. They have to do with bandit raids and communists and guns firing and war. All right, so a storm is coming. Almost surely many storms. It is early summer 1931 in China. Early summer in Chinjiangpu at the Benevolent and Compassionate Hospital. Now the largest Presbyterian mission hospital in the world, and world-renowned for Dr. Bell's work on Kala Azar. Early in summer in the jails of Huayan, it was not surprising that the Chinese characters for hell and prison were identical. Yes, early summer in the jail, where men listen attentively to the gospel. Early summer in the countryside, where men struggle to grow rice, where cattle browse and bandits flourish. Here in China, where there has been an unprecedented openness to the gospel, is now a storm center. Look closely, and you'll see it approach. It is swirling down from the north, crossing the border from Korea. Even in 1931, when the West still rules India and much of Asia, when the white man's burden is an acceptable political doctrine, when China still struggles in chaos. An indigenous church, in China as in Korea. That's it, an indigenous church. These voices, we were expecting them, for it is they who guide the mission policies. They are intelligent, they are hard workers, they are missionaries. And they are yours to listen to.
Well, it's been highly effective in Korea.
It's also the aim of the Southern Presbyterian Mission here in China.
I know, an indigenous church. But self-supporting or subsidized from foreign funds?
Self-supporting and self-propagating under national leadership.
The Tinjungpu Church has supported itself for years and is self-governing.
Around Tinjungpu, the mission still pays and supports many of the country churches and preaches.
Not necessarily chosen by the Holy Spirit, though. Many of them have proven to be failures.
Remember what a high spiritual value the Tinjungpu Church sets on membership.
Yes. Well, nearly 100 candidates applied last session, and only 8 were admitted after oral examination.
Yes. Even dear Dr. Wu. And he's such a kind, gentle person. Why, he had to apply more than once for membership.
A man really has to live his Christianity to be accepted into the Tinjungpu Church.
Even so, to hand over Western-built hospitals and schools to Chinese control seems a sure way to ruin the church and squander the resources.
The missionary hospital was founded for the benefit of all the people in its region.
Exactly, and not to provide income and power for local Christians.
But you have gone on long vacations and...
And the work dropped.
That was before you had such a devoted staff.
They still work best under Western leadership.
Ah, they proved steadfast in the great evacuation.
Well, that's true.
And also true that when Bell returned in 1928, they, and we, were only too thankful.
The real trouble is that the church will not be able to take hold as fast as we're willing to let go.
Many years later, Bell's policy certainly paid off. For Tinjungpu survived when several other hospitals failed after the missionaries were interned or expelled by the Japanese in 1941. That summer of 1931 was appalling to China. It rained and rained and rained again. The water spread over the edges of the world. The Yangtze overflowed at Hankou in central China. The banks of the Grand Canal broke at Tsutsin. Down below at Tinjungpu, where the Grand Canal was nearly 100 yards wide, the 2 ancient bridges were underwater. The new foreign-built bridge was awash. The West Bank was partially flooded, yet crowded with refugees. Then, a typhoon whirled through the neighborhood. The bank broke in 13 places.
Disasters, one after the other, for China, for the mission, for us personally. All that summer and into the next spring, tragedy after tragedy. How can we ever forget?
The force of the water created a lake 150 miles long and 100 miles wide. A lake, instead of the bandits and students of Confucius and warlords that we spoke about, instead of Chinese men and women toiling in green rice paddies, smoking, gambling, playing cards, living and dying, instead of little boys gording oxen and flying kites in the blue skies, little girls and babies with slant eyes playing and crying and walking on tiny bound feet, a lake, and 7 million people homeless. Is this where your chaos-producing lightnings will next strike storm? Are these northernmost towns and cities, this province, not to form part of the China that Chiang Kai-shek hopes to remake, stabilizing and reforming, removing the abuse and inequalities which breed communism? Is this Japanese occupation of Manchuria to imperil all of China? Or will they come later when the brutal attack comes on Shanghai? Fight on. China will save herself by her own exertions from all but communism. England and America and the League of Nations will start the first of these supine appeasements, which will lead to the Second World War. The missionaries will weather this storm.
Humanly speaking, this is no place to be in now. But when we look at God's promise, and when he so plainly leads us here and opens the way for us to carry on our work, as he is, why should we be fearful and afraid? It's wonderful how peaceful he permits us to feel.
But here, at the outpatient clinic at the Chin Jung Poo Hospital...
There you are, Mother. That shot should do it. Lee Song Jen will be all right now. Bring her back next week for a good checkup, okay?
I'll come back next week.
Dr. Bell!
What is it, Lang?
Uncle! Jimmy! Graham!
He's away on furlough. You know that. Catch your breath a minute, Lang. Then you can tell me whatever it is.
Uncle Jimmy's house!
What's wrong with it? Not a fire.
No! No! Not fire! Surrounded!
Surrounded?
By soldiers! People! Many people! Very, very angry! Soldiers find 3 children kidnapped by bandits! Bandits caught and tell... Children! Children dead!
Dead?
Buried in hole inside house in Uncle Jimmy's garden. Soldier from Huayan.
Huayan police. They couldn't have had a warrant.
People very angry. Soon will break open house. Take many things.
I'd better get right over.
No, no, doctor, sir. Police torture. Kill people who help bandits.
Help bandits? None of us helped any bandits. Surely they know us well enough. We'd have nothing to do with bandits or hostages.
People know that, but don't think with head. Very, very angry.
Yes, well, I'm going to go over anyway.
Be patient. The Graham's house will not be looted, nor the missionaries suffer repercussions this time. But the storm of anti-foreign agitation is just beginning to break. And there are other, more subtle storms brewing in this summer of 1931... A loss of nerve among supporters in America, which is sliding deeper into the Great Depression. A postponement of furloughs, dangerous to both the health and the efficiency of the missionaries. And a halt in sending out new candidates, just when the response to Christianity in China is warmer than ever before. But those are only small storm centers. There is another, looming large on the horizon. The nationalist government's educational policy.
So, the Chinese pastor and elders there propose to register their school.
Well, they can't. Not without a majority vote of the North Chung mission.
It's either register or disappear.
It would be better for it to disappear. Once registered, even a missionary school can't teach the Bible or Christian principles.
Well, it could be an optional extra.
That's compromise, and I can't agree.
Oh, of course. When the Chin Jung Poo schools closed, you had the space to use for your Kala Azar patients.
Well, you know Pastor Cao said he would rather his son be a mason or carpenter than go to a school where Dr. Soon is worshipped and the Bible put out.
Oh, yes, but the Bible wouldn't really be put out.
The Bible is the sword of the Spirit and should be in front of us as our active agent for Christian warfare. In a registered school, not only is it forbidden in front, it must be behind. And not only behind, it must be hidden.
Oh, yes, but
besides,
surely
most of the Chinese arguments for registering are based on the statement, there's nothing else to do.
Well, is there?
We all admit that the mission colleges and high schools that have registered soon lost their distinctive Christian character.
So, well, what do you suggest? How can the Chinese Christians educate their children?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. But this I do know. When we commit our way to God, he opens the way for us. But if we open our own way, it's the wrong way. God is able to provide for them if they will trust him.
Remember the children of Israel came to the Red Sea, and their cause looked hopeless, with the hosts of Egypt behind, the mountains on the side, and the sea in front. But God opened the way.
And so the dark clouds swirl that summer of 1931, political, physical, economic, and even spiritual. Perhaps more than any other, spiritual. The telegram arrives, brief, succinct, even calm. Jack Vinson carried off by bandits. Uncle Jack of Haikau, only 3 weeks out of the hospital after an operation, visiting his country churches, was caught in a bandit raid, carried off with others after the town had been sacked. Jack Vinson carried off by bandits, besieged with them in another small town by pursuing government troops, offered by them his freedom if he would persuade the government troops to withdraw. But the bandits would not promise to release every captive. So Jack Vinson refused to leave. Refused freedom, safety, life for himself. Chose to remain captive like the rest, rather than accept life alone. Break out, run, escape, flee. The bandits and their prisoners both running now. Run, run, run! Until you reel drunkenly and your legs tremble, and the pain of your recent operation rises like nausea in your throat. Then one bandit, seeing that you peril the escape because you can no longer move, snatches his revolver.
You moron! I kill you! You are afraid?
No, I'm not afraid. If you kill me, I will go right to God.
There are more storms coming, political, economic, physical, social, spiritual, to threaten the curving earth and crackle down the edges of the hemispheres, as they did in China that summer of 1931 and on into 1932 and 33, until Dr. Nelson Bell would exclaim,
"Truly, we've been hit hard, but we still have the assurance that God only permits these things in love. And we know that all things work together for those who love the Lord."
And so we conclude Chapter 6 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 7 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell.
Is the soul's sincere desire unuttered or expressed? The motion of a hidden...
Truly, 1932 was a year of prayer. It was also a year of rejoicing. The Bells had a new son, Clayton, affectionately referred to as Dee Dee.
You see, Ruthie? I told you so.
Oh, what, Mimi?
I told you God would answer our prayers, mine and Rosa's and yours, and send us a baby brother.
Yes, Dee Dee, he's here. But you didn't know that Mama and Papa were praying for another girl.
Were they really, Ruthie?
Yes, 1932, the year of prayer for the Bells. Cholera followed the famine which followed the floods of 1931. From June to September, the Chinjiangpu staff had been inundated with cholera cases. They also set up an emergency hospital with a full-time doctor at Huayan. When Nelson drove to and from Huayan, people continually stopped his car, begging him to come to their homes. The Bells' children knew how much suffering the epidemic had caused, but on an October day...
Prayer is the burden of a sigh, the falling of a tear, the upward glancing of an eye when none but God can hear. Prayer is the simplest form of speech that infant lips can try. Prayer, the sublimest strains that reach the majesty on high.
Oh, don't cry, Ruth. Oh, don't cry, darling.
We hoped and prayed that God would let the baby I found thrown away live. But I also asked God to take it home. And I can't stand to think I'm the only mother. And Anne did not care for it more than to throw it away before it died. Oh, Mama, I hate the Chinese pagan superstitions. It's so cruel to throw out a little baby who dies and not bury it, just so the evil spirits won't come back and take another child. I'll never forget this poor baby. Thrown out because it was having convulsions and the parents were sure it would die? Oh, Mama, Mama, I can't stand it.
What impressed Ruth deepest was the heathendom, in stark contrast to the kindliness of the Chinese Christians, should force the parents to such actions. It all helped to illustrate what the Bible says, the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel.
Prayer is the soul's sincere desire, unuttered or expressed. The motion of a hidden fire that trembles in the breast.
Papa, it's more than 2 weeks now that we've been praying and praying for Gower's children.
I know, Ruth. But we must believe it's like he said when we heard the news. Don't worry. God has some good purpose in all this.
Oh, it's hard to believe that, Papa. We know what bandits are like, and now they have a little boy and a baby girl in their hands.
Don't expect the worst, Ruth. Although Gao and his wife have gotten all kinds of anonymous letters, some of them fakes, I'm sure. At least no fingers or ears come with them.
Yes, Papa, but remember you said that Baby Lee had no chance to live because she had just gotten over whooping cough and that she...
I know. And little Gao was such a lovable child and so brilliant.
Remember how quick he always was to answer any Bible questions? The first to answer and always right to the point.
Well, we must continue to commit them to the Lord and trust him to take care of them.
Poor Gao Er and Mrs. Mahon. How awful they must feel. I wonder what they'll do about the ransom notes.
Tell us, what does Lada say?
Yes, read it to us, Brother Mihong.
Listen. Shh. Listen and hear what I and my honorable wife would say. I am not a rich man and could not pay even $50. God gave me these children, and he will return them to me. I will not pay ransom. I leave the matter in the hands of God.
No ransom, no child.
How can you be so foolish, Brother Mihong?
No ransom, no child. Is not true, innkeeper Fang?
How can you trust in a God who was unable to keep your children from being kidnapped in the first place? Tell us that!
Yes! Tell us! Tell us!
How about that, Gao Er?
How can you risk the lives of those two innocent children by refusing to pay the ransom for their return?
Listen. Listen to me, my friends. Listen to what I say. Listen, listen. I leave my children. I leave my children and your questions in the hands of God. My Christian friends and I will continue to pray daily to the Lord for the safe return of the children. He will answer. You will see.
And so Gao carried on his official duties and continued to lead his share of chapel services. Still, his laugh was heard. His wife did not falter either, though the days seemed longer and longer. 33 days after the abduction, a fast messenger peddled into the hospital from An Tung, 20 miles away. Government soldiers had captured a bandit chief whose wife was nursing 2 babies. Under questioning, she confessed that one was a hostage from Chin Jung Pu. The soldiers were given a present, and the baby girl was home that night.
Raise child up that we may see her.
My unworthy girl child. She is in bouncing health because the bandit's wife nursed her. I could not afford a wet nurse, but God provided one.
What value has a baby girl? The bandits found it not worth the worry of taking care of her.
Innkeeper Fang is right. Baby girl has little value.
But the boy, he will never be returned without the ransom being paid.
I believe in God's love, my friends, and I have complete confidence in his promise to hear his servants. We will go on praying for little Gao.
I heard one of the Chinese men say that the soldiers are angry at the small reward they got for Gao's baby girl and aren't even trying to find little Gao.
Yes, I know, but now that the captured bandit has told the militia that this particular kidnapping was at the suggestion of an innkeeper named Fang near the Benevolent Compassionate Hospital, there seems to be more hope of finding him.
But, Papa, why would Mr. Fang do something so awful?
Well, he said it was to get revenge on Cao for loss of face.
Loss of face? Why?
Remember I told you and Mama, it was about 5 months ago, that Gao had found that someone had tampered with one of our Kalaizar patient charts?
Yes.
Well, that's when it began. We traced it to innkeeper Fang. He wanted to get the drug to resell it to a healthy man.
It's good Gao caught it.
Yes, but because I gave innkeeper Fang a tongue-lashing in front of his father for trying to sell the stupasan on the black market, he lost much face.
Oh, his poor father. He must have been very upset, too. His own son.
Well, it seems that that was why Fang wanted revenge. But Fang swears he has no idea of little Gao's whereabouts.
Dear God, my father, I stand here today with my wife, holding our 2 children in our arms again before thee. Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. I knew that thou hearest me always, but I have said this on account of people standing by, that they may believe. We all know that never before in all North Jingzhou has a child been recovered from bandits without ransom. And it has been 40 days, Father, yet the children are safe and well. I thank thee, Father, for only the Lord could do such a thing as this. Truly thou art a great God and worthy to be praised forever.
Well, let's get out and stretch the legs. The soldiers at the guard points were asleep all the way here.
Oh, we traveled safely, and the baby was as good as gold.
And the girls?
Papa, is our car going to cross the bridge on those two pieces of wood?
Yes, dear. Ruth, keep a tight hold on Mamie's hand.
I will, Papa. See, it's going to...
What?
Oh, Nelson, look. The car seat where you were sitting a moment ago.
Papa, if you'd been sitting there, he would have shot you in the back.
Oh, so sorry. So sorry. Soldier's very new. Didn't realize what he was doing. First time he ever had pistol.
Oh, thank God. Thank God that Nelson was protected.
Such were the incidents in the years following 1931, the year of the floods that brought on the famine, that brought on the cholera. Years of open doors in China. The people accepted Western medicine more readily. The mission hospital and the country evangelists, both American and Chinese, found steadily increasing response to the Christian message. The people's willingness to listen, which had been so noticeable in the early 1930s, continued. The communists were lying low, but the Japanese would not leave the Chinese alone. China grew stronger, but war with Japan became inevitable. And through it all, the Christians prayed for courage and strength that, having done all, they might stand fast.
O thou by whom we come to God, the life, the truth, the way, the path of prayer thyself has trod, Lord, teach us how to pray.
And so we conclude Chapter 7 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 8 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell.
Dearest Rosa and Ruth, it is quieter now that you are both away. We miss you. As I sit here and write, it is cold, and I'm glad to have the fireplace. In all of our trips, going and coming, and in Shanghai, God has been so good to us. The opportunities of work are almost unlimited, and God's good hand is on us. It's hard to explain, so it seems to make sense. But we feel that God is making it plain, despite the rumors and ugly stories and threats of the Japanese invasion, that our station and work is the place for us. If that is true, it would be foolish and wrong and dangerous to run away. The safe place is where He wants us to be.
The record of those months when Japan attacked China is derived from history books, narratives, letters, and the pages written by those who saw with their own eyes and were part of it. At first, it was not clear whether the incidents near Peking early in July 1937 would lead to full-scale war. The Chinese could hardly accede to Japanese demands without Chiang losing such face that he must resign. The great powers, however, could force Japan to climb down. But Europe, practicing appeasement, merely called a conference, which America, practicing isolation, sabotaged by staying away.
I've laid in 6 months' supply of fuel and had a roof painted with American Hospital in characters equally recognizable by Japanese and Chinese airmen, and with USA in English letters. Was able to send the Japanese Foreign Ministry, through a friend high up in the State Department, exact plans of the hospital, giving no excuse for mistakes. Also, I'm planning on running up the American flag every day now, although I hate to flaunt our foreignness as missionaries.
These are the words Dr. Bell wrote in his hospital office on the cool July night in Chinjiangpu between the Japanese attacks on Peking and Shanghai.
This guidance may not be what I hoped for. It may not be what I expect. And again I hear that verse, "Thine ears shall hear a word behind thee saying, this is the way, walk ye in it, when ye turn to the right hand and when ye turn to the left." There are many turnings in the life of a Christian. It is important to be so sensitive to the leading of God's Holy Spirit that when you seemingly have come up against a stone wall, just wait. Don't try to climb over it. He will show you whether to turn to the right hand or to the left.
Tuesday, August 17th. Chinjiangpu had its first air raid. Three Japanese planes flew over and dropped three or four bombs at the airport. The Bells left their dinner and rushed upstairs to get a bird's-eye view of the countryside. Explosions, flashes, dust. Soon came reports of the damage. One cow killed, one training plane damaged, and one bomb which fell near the North Gate and did not explode. And so the months passed. Then, late in February 1938, the Japanese resumed their drives, advancing relentlessly from all four directions. March passed into April, then into May. The Japanese were only a few miles away, yet still they did not come, hindered by stiff resistance and by strategic considerations elsewhere.
I feel like the dog whose master removed his tail by cutting off an inch each day, never knowing when the Japanese are going to invade Chinjiangpu. Those bombers. Varnish, You're standing on my foot.
Oh, so sorry, Doctor. Varnish not scared of bombers, just feel a little braver near Doctor.
Well, it's all right, but don't get too close to me again when the bombers go over and we're operating.
Oh.
You bumped my elbow last time.
Under his wings, I am safely abiding. For the night deepens and tempests are wild, still I can trust him. I know him.
Oh, Nelson, did... Are you in bed already?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to waken you. I just wanted to say... Yeah, but you go back to sleep, honey.
I'm awake now, Virginia. What did you want to tell me?
Oh, just that I appreciated your duet with Jess. Oh, Dr. Wood said that it turned a nightmare into a party. And that was such a good idea of yours, to count our defenses. That was especially precious. Overhead are the overshadowing wings. Underneath are the everlasting arms. All around, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth him. And inside...
Inside that peace that passeth all understanding.
Yes. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Oh, you know, I've been worried about you, Nelson, driving out into the country on calls when the bombers come over.
I've told you not to worry, Virginia. The car motor makes so much noise I can't hear them coming, but I always keep a weather eye on people in streets or fields.
If they look up at the sky, I know it's time to jump out and take cover.
Now, come to bed. Don't worry.
I am. I mean, I'm not. Worrying, that is. I'm just thinking again of all our defenses. Overhead, underneath, all around. And inside, peace inside. At least I'm glad you can sleep so easily and confidently.
Between raids, the Bells could hear continuous artillery duels from the southwest. On May 22nd, Virginia wrote to Rosa and Ruth at college in Wheaton.
We feel quite sure the enemy is approaching. The poor people are terrified and have left town by the thousands. We had church this a.m. at 6 o'clock. Pretty good crowd. Bert Talbot preached. Oh, splendid message. We passed rickshaw after rickshaw loaded to the hilt and people carrying things leaving town. Most doors were shut and looked like a real Sunday street, only we knew that behind the doors, one or two had been left to look after the property.
The next week, the bombs smashed and burned out the quarters of Chin Jung Poo's inner walled city, which lay nearest to the hospital. Virginia wrote to the girls in America.
It is impossible to know yet how many are killed. We are thankful so many had fled to the country. The city was almost deserted. It is all so pitiful, and the poor things are so frightened. They're huddled in the chapel and on the hospital porches. And right now, Daddy is not allowing refugees, only the injured, into the hospital compound. We could not possibly take care of so many.
That same night, Weyon had an even worse raid. Then, 60 miles to the north, a big battle ended in Chinese victory. Over 600 casualties reached Xinjiangpu on a single day. Then, in mid-June, a whole week passed without incident. Each sunlit morning, the Bells wondered how many bombers would be over, and each hour seemed a reprieve. Relief flooded in at dusk, and they only wished the night could last longer. For a time, the Bells could hardly get used to the quiet. But as week succeeded week that summer, the songbirds under the silent, strangely empty sky seemed sweeter and more numerous than anyone could remember. The city returned almost to normal, the hospital busier than ever.
I really think the Japanese are still miles away, Ken.
The Japanese!
Poor things, Nelson. They're scared to death.
Open the gates, Dr. Bell! The Japanese are coming from the south! From the south!
Can't be. The reports have all been that they're coming from the north.
Open the gate! Let us in, please, Dr. Bell!
A rising sun is flying over the east gate, beyond the canal. Let us in!
All right, Ken.
I don't believe it, but we'll let them in. They'll have to crowd into the men's and women's chapels of the clinic building as we planned.
Your binoculars, darling. You can look for the flag through them.
What flag?
That man said the rising sun was flying over the east gate by the canal.
All right, thanks. You know, there it is. Some traitor, I suppose. Those planes. Funny they're not dropping their loads on the city. I guess I'd better drive over to the east gate and investigate. The validity or falseness of the rumors have a direct bearing on the refugee problem, and...
Nelson Bell, you'll do no such thing. Why, investigate...
I must, Virginia. I have to find out if the Japanese are...
There's no if about it. Look, Nelson, those are Japanese soldiers in that jeep that's approaching.
So they are.
The astonishing, merciful anticlimax had been the culmination of a brilliant strategy. The Japanese had made a feint in the north, drawing away almost the entire Chinese strength, and then swept massive armored and cavalry forces around by an undefended flank to take Chinjiangpu from the south. They did not bomb the city itself because they wanted it undamaged as their headquarters. Nelson and Virginia were dazed, yet relieved. Thankful to God, who had so wonderfully kept them and their city. Despite the losses the people might sustain in the future, their houses were not destroyed by bombing or shell fire or burning. Now they faced the question, what would life in Chinjiangpu be like under the Japanese? And so we conclude Chapter 8 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 9 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell.
Nelson, those are Japanese soldiers in that jeep that's coming.
So they are. Chinjiangpu has fallen. There'll be no more air raids now.
Clayton, you can go and pull down the dugout if you like.
Well, that wasn't nearly as bad as I'd anticipated.
Our little car gave us face in the eyes of the Japanese, I guess.
The general was very courteous and friendly, wasn't he?
Yeah. Surprised and delighted to see Clayton as I had anticipated.
At least he proved the innocence of our activities.
Well, I surely hope so.
Papa, will Mimi be surprised when I tell her Mom about all the horses and guns and soldiers we saw? And 15 tanks! There must have been millions of soldiers.
No, millions, son. But at least 3,000.
Such perfect order and discipline.
Yeah. Such a contrast to the rather ramshackle Chinese forces. No wonder they were defeated.
I sure hated bowing to the general.
I know. But for the hospital's sake, only through his whim can the hospital function.
No one would have thought so to hear you talk to him. We are neutrals living in Chinjiangpu to preach the gospel and heal the sick.
Yes, his eyes opened with that, didn't they? But I knew there was no point in asking him if we could. I had to say we would. It was essential to show I was not afraid of him.
And I almost gasped when you told him we had nothing to hide and would welcome his representatives and show them everything.
My heart was in my boots, too. I was thinking of that ward of badly wounded Chinese soldiers.
When I think of how the Japanese bayonet wounded prisoners,
I keep praying about it. I'm sure the Lord will protect somehow.
Papa, I saved one of the candies the general gave me for Mama and one for Mimi, and I have one left for myself, too.
The way you were popping them into your mouth, young fella, I knew they must be good.
Well, you see, it's the first time I ever had Japanese candy.
Oh.
Seems strange to realize that the Japanese are finally here in Jinjiangpu. That year of freedom when we kept expecting them and they didn't arrive was an amazingly unexpected boon for the hospital and the gospel work.
You know, Nelson, I'll never forget that talk you gave in foreign prayer meeting the other night about the place of physical fear in the life of a Christian.
It was a blessing to my own heart, too, when it dawned on me.
I had never before thought of fear in relation to our Lord.
Our Lord, tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. Hungered, thirsted, was tired, became angry, and gave every evidence of his humanity, but he was never fearful.
Like you said, fear must come from lack of faith.
Sin. And just as we never become sinless, so we never entirely lose fear.
Oh, how I wish we could. Fear makes one lose all incentive. Just look at the Chinese peasants. Scared to death, gray-faced, almost unable to move.
Must be why he promised to give us his peace. Surely it must be his will for his children to live with peace
Papa.
In their hearts, trusting in him and his
Papa.
Promises. Clayton, you know you shouldn't interrupt when Papa speaks.
Papa, I forgot and I ate Mama's candy. Now I only have two pieces left. One for Mimi and one for me.
Oh, dear Father, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. I'm so glad you know all about it. It seems so very ridiculous to me, Father, all this fuss about Clayton's pigeons. Lord, you know that we wouldn't let little Clayton send carrier pigeons out to spy on the Japanese. Of course, he never does a very good job of keeping them clean or anything. And how can they imagine that a 6-year-old boy could possibly be a link in a spy chain, even if he is an American? Oh, Father, it seems so silly. And yet it's serious, too, and we don't know what to do. Please, give Nelson wisdom to know what to say to convince them, Father. It's such a strain to be under constant suspicion by a people who have not the remotest idea of what we are out here to do. And yet, the Japanese go out of their way to please Nelson and put no restriction on the work of the hospital. Oh, and I do thank you for this, Father. Oh, but please, Father, give Nelson the right words about Clayton and his pet pigeons. And, Father, help me to keep trusting in you and your promises and increase my faith. Thank you, Father. I do thank you. Amen.
Dr. Bell, the man in the private ward, you know, the ruptured appendix?
Yes, nurse, Mr. Lee. Is something wrong?
No, nothing wrong. It's just he wants to speak with you. In fact, he insists on it.
No, I was just leaving.
Yes, I know. I told him so, but he was very upset and says he must see you immediately.
Oh, doctor, thank you. I am very sick, yes. Possibly I die.
You are very sick, Mr. Lee, but I have every confidence that you will get well. Your chart shows you're doing better today.
I am sick enough so you believe me, Doctor.
Well, of course I believe you.
And I have heard much of you. I trust you.
Thank you. I'm glad.
Tell me, what you know about me?
About you? Well, what everyone knows, I guess.
Oh, you tell me.
Well, you were brought in here with a ruptured appendix. Oh. You were put in a private ward, and your armed men are outside the door.
All true. What is my work, Doctor?
You are... They say you are chief of the puppet secret police, working for the Japanese.
Doctor, what do you think?
Well, I guess it seems to be true.
Good. You think, Japanese think, everybody think, I'm working for the Japanese. I'm not. I'm under the orders of General Chiang Kai-shek and the Nationalist Army, trying to help the Chinese. One of our strict orders is to protect missionaries and Christians.
This is interesting, Mr. Lee.
Listen, Doctor. Just get rid of your radio transmitter, because the Japanese are going to search the hospital tomorrow under pretense of looking for communists.
I have no transmitter, Mr. Lee, only a receiver.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. We use a receiver to get messages from Shanghai before the 1 p.m. news, since the telephone and telegraph wires were cut.
I'll be sure to explain well to them. They will believe you, I think. Doctor, also, you must get rid of man in room A6 immediately.
You know?
He is wounded guerrilla officer. I know. He has been patient here for weeks. The Japanese find out. I know he is nearly well now. Get rid of him. That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. I'll do as you say.
You know, Dr. Bell, time and again I have met people in the country who have put away their idols and who believe in the gospel and say they first heard it in this hospital.
God has been very good to us, Miss Feng. With all the suffering and chaos created by the Japanese occupation, the guerrillas, the communists, and the exceptionally severe winter.
In this darkness, the Qingjiangpu Hospital stands like a beacon.
I've been amazed that every one of the 360 beds remains full.
And Dr. Ko told me the average attendance at the clinics number 400 every day.
Well, as you know, since the independent medical men can no longer obtain Stibusan, the Kala-Azar patients come in great numbers to the hospital. And I'm continually figuring out how to maintain my stock of medicines. It's almost 6 weeks since Ray volunteered to go to Shanghai for supplies. He should be back soon, I hope.
It looks to me, and to some of the other country evangelists too, like the Lord is using this scourge of Kala-Azar to spread the gospel among tens of thousands.
Yes. There's been so much to encourage us in the hospital work. So many evidences of the working of the Holy Spirit and the effectiveness of the evangelistic work.
Yes, please, God.
About 10 days ago, I heard of four entire families who are now believers because of patients converted here in the hospital.
And it's another evidence to me, of course, working, that the local authorities have remained more or less friendly.
I have no illusions about what might happen. But you're right. The fact remains that God has put men here now who are friendly toward us. But I'm certain that our work will be disrupted by war. Possibly soon.
The whole outlook was increasingly somber. Nelson became convinced that the world war would soon spread to the Pacific and that his work at Qingjiangpu would be interrupted. He already knew what he wanted to do if he got out of China alive. While earning his living as a surgeon until China reopened, he would establish a journal which would rally the Southern Presbyterian Church by stating clearly the basic theological issues which too rapidly were becoming fogged. Nelson and Virginia Bell faced the future fully persuaded that what God had promised, he was able to perform. As the international scene darkened, Nelson again recounted the divine promises of protection.
It seems to me we simply have to seek one thing, to be in the place and doing the work God wants. The rest we should leave to him in absolute faith.
Early on the morning of Monday, May 19th, 1941, The other missionaries, the entire hospital staff and servants, and a large crowd of citizens, country folk, innkeepers, traders, Japanese, came to the Grand Canal jetty where the bells had landed nearly a quarter of a century before. Now it was time to say goodbye. Everyone knew how much suffering must pass first. Nevertheless, the cry on all sides was, "Come back! Come back soon!" And so we conclude Chapter 9 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago.
Since October 7th of 1946, the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute has been writing and producing Stories of Great Christians. It was live in those early days and produced for only one audience, the Chicago area listeners of WMBI. Today, Stories of Great Christians reaches across the country and the world with the message of lives changed by Christ. Even in those formative years, our goal was not to elevate men and women, but to magnify God's working in the lives of those who are fully yielded in faith and obedience to Him. What it means is that it is possible for you to hear from the Master's lips, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many." Write us today at the Department of Broadcasting, Moody Bible Institute, Chicago, Illinois, 60610. It is for you and because of you that Stories of Great Christians has been broadcast these many years.
Stories of Great Christians. From the radio studios of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, we are bringing you Chapter 10 of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell. Far Eastern officials of the State Department had laughed in Bell's face when he urged on them his conviction that Japan intended war. The conference in Washington ended unsatisfactorily, but Pearl Harbor did not take Bell by surprise. In fact, so certain was Bell of war that he acquired in October 1941 a surgical practice in North Carolina, with an office in Swansonia and with hospital work in the city of Asheville. Then came December 7th and Pearl Harbor. What Nelson Bell had foreseen became a reality. Halfway across the world, this time in America, he again quickly established a high professional reputation.
I was his colleague when Dr. Bell was appointed secretary of the staff of Asheville Memorial Mission Hospital, and after 5 years, assistant chief of staff. Only his own illness prevented him from eventually being offered the post of chief of staff.
Yes, and I'll never forget when I was an intern. The time he was called in when a serious construction accident caused an unusual injury to a young worker.
Oh, yes?
As soon as he came in, he said that the injury was similar to damage he'd repaired in China.
People were drawn to him, both by his skill and by his reputation as a man of God. The combination is rare.
Well, I'm from Jackson, Tennessee, but I had heard of Dr. Bell from my sister, and when I found out I had to have my gallbladder, I just insisted on going to Dr. Bell. You know why? Because I knew he prayed for his patients before he operated on them. Oh, not out loud, of course, but he prayed. And when I was opened up, I wanted to be opened up with prayer.
When I crashed my taxi near Atlanta, I made him bring me back to Asheville so Dr. Bell could do the surgery. Boy, let me tell you, that really changed my life, because that's when I met Jesus.
Dr. Bell? He took care of me once, and all I can say is he's more like Jesus than any man I know.
Many other stories are still told of Bell's 15 years as one of the leading surgeons of North Carolina. The World War ended. The Japanese surrendered. Chin Jung Poo fell into communist hands, then was recaptured by the nationalists. The Chinese church asked Southern Presbyterian Mission headquarters,
"After you all leave from the hospital and from China, we all have bad times. Now we are all well, and all of us heartily hope and officially request that Dr. Lover of the Chinese people and his family return very soon, not for a while only, but to live with us forever and forever."
I hardly know how to answer the Chinese Christians in Chin Jung Poo. Obviously, Bell has to be taken off the list, since his bursitis of the hip is so bad.
Even if he could walk, after the operation, his colleagues advise he still is responsible for his mother. She's totally blind now, I understand.
The last report from Dr. Richardson is not good. He says the whole Chin Jung Poo region has become a battleground in the Civil War. Tension, unrest, constant encroachments by the communists.
Makes one wonder if even Bell would be able to reestablish a satisfactory medical work.
In a few months, Hopkins and Richardson will probably have to leave Chin Jung Poo.
As Bell says, I am sure the Lord's hand is in it.
Yes, that's it. We will just trust the Lord for his leading and guidance, both for China and for Nelson Bell.
Though his heart was in China, Nelson waited for the will of the Lord to be made plain, and so he watched from afar the closing acts of the tragedy. Contact with Chin Jung Poo, except by prayer, was cut off altogether. Before missionary Ed Curry was forced to leave Haikou under the communists, in a room crowded with soldiers, he talked with a young woman dressed like any other communist soldier.
And do you really remember, Li Chen, when I used to visit your village with Dr. Bell?
Oh, yes, I remember. But many things have happened since then. Dr. Bell has gone, and soon you too will leave.
You were drafted into the Red Forces.
And I have been through many dangerous actions, yes, and much indoctrination.
Yes, communist indoctrination.
Of course. I'm sorry, it is time to leave.
Oh, let me walk with you to the door. Miss Chin, don't forget what you learned in the Christian school when you were a little girl.
Could I forget my Lord?
And that's how it was, Nelson. Li Chin looked me full in the face, asking, could I forget my Lord? And she turned and went out.
And to think Virginia and I are occasionally asked if we ever feel that our years in China were wasted.
Wasted, those years in China? And what of the other years after 1941? That summer, he returned to the States and began to build a new practice. Meanwhile, he worked toward a realization of his ambition to found a Presbyterian journal. The Southern Presbyterian Journal, to state and defend the historic evangelical and reformed faith. Nelson's surgical consultations and operations became far too numerous to allow him to edit a magazine, and he offered Henry B. Dendy the editorship, which Dendy accepted temporarily.
Bell was the magazine's mainspring. He was really the main editor. I did the legwork, just backing up. While Nelson was doing his heavy surgical practice in various hospitals, he would call me and say, "Meet me right outside the door on that third floor of the hospital as I come out of the operating room, and I'll be through at such and such a time." Almost always he was through on time and ready to meet me and discuss something about the paper.
The circulation, which opened in 1942 at 600 copies, was running at 46,000 in 1971, and copies were dispatched to 28 countries. The magazine was disliked and feared by those seeking to weaken biblical foundations, but welcomed by others, strengthening the waverers, and sometimes causing the entire redirecting of a ministry.
And what was Nelson Bell seeking that he should work so? That his magazine should grow so rapidly to a place of influence? Why did the General Assembly of Southern Presbyterian Mission elect Dr. Bell, a member of the Board of World Missions? Did he campaign for it?
He never sought it.
And then they re-elected him a second and a third time, and they kept him there for 17 years. Why?
He never sought it. Back of it all was his devotional life, unhurried Bible study and prayer every morning.
Work, for the night is coming. Work through the morning hours. Work while the dew is sparkling. Work mid springing flowers. Work when the day grows brighter. Work in the glowing sun. Work, for the night is coming when man's work is done.
Ask the board members about it. Ask them about the great debate on the proposed merger between Northern and Southern Presbyterians. Nelson Bell threw his whole weight and his magazine against union. Ask them. They can tell you.
Nelson and many others of us considered that the Northern Church was no longer true to the great biblical foundation truths.
But Nelson was thoroughly fair. Even those with whom he disagreed diametrically.
Further, the disparity of the members was such that the Southern Presbyteries would have little to say in the United Church.
Nelson is the only man I have ever seen come through a controversy and have more friends when he ended than when he started. How he worked.
Work, work, work. His surgical practice, the magazine, the Southern Presbyterian leadership. Why? I ask you, why?
Ask Dr. Billy Graham, then. He's Dr. Bell's son-in-law.
It was Christmas, and I was chatting with Nelson. I remarked that I felt a magazine was needed in Protestantism, an evangelical, theologically oriented magazine that would command the attention of the Protestant ministers. I found our vision was identical.
Our convictions were identical regarding the absolute necessity of this magazine. He from his worldwide experience, and I from my limited experience in founding the journal and subsequent observations on American Protestantism.
All through the summer and early fall of 1955, which included a visit to Europe on an official delegation of the American College of Surgeons, Nelson lived two lives, putting every ounce of his strength into both until in November, he had a second heart attack. He felt this was as clear a divine call as had the sudden call to be a medical missionary 44 years before. So he retired completely from practice as a surgeon and became executive editor of the fortnightly in preparation, Christianity Today. The first issue of Christianity Today appeared in October 1956, sent free to every Protestant minister in America and to many abroad. It swiftly became a leading voice in Protestantism.
And do you never feel that your years were wasted? Years in China, Years on the mission board. Years in writing, in prayer.
Wasted? Never. We know that someday in heaven, we will meet with many who came to know Christ at the hospital, through the magazines. What could be more worthwhile?
Time merges into eternity. On August 2nd, 1973, Dr. L. Nelson Bell went to be with his Lord.
I will never forget that day he gave one of the main addresses at the World Mission Conference. He spoke with such force and such power and such authority that I immediately realized that my father-in-law was a great man with great courage and boldness. But it took me some time to realize that his tremendous strength came from his private devotional life. He was never ostentatious about it. It was a lifetime habit that he simply took for granted.
You have just heard the 10th and concluding chapter of A Foreign Devil in China, the story of Nelson Bell, based on the book by John C. Pollock and freely adapted for radio by Marion Clark. This has been another in a series of Stories of Great Christians produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago.